Welcome to Between the Rows, where you get to hear the stories behind the stories in Canada's leading farm publications.
Hello, and welcome to another edition of Between the Rows. I'm your host this week, Gord Gilmore. This time we'll be talking to Alexis Kinlan of Alberta Farmer Express about emergency planning and farmers. We'll speak to well-known agriculture journalist Barbara Duckworth on the occasion of her retirement from the Western Producer after having served prairie farmers since 1988. And Phil Franz Workington of Markets Farm will help us decode the markets as they respond to the COVID-19 pandemic. But up first is Beth Connery. She operates Connery Riverdale Farms just south of Portage la Prairie, Manitoba, where she employs seasonal workers. She's also the labor chair of the Canadian Horticultural Council. We reached her by telephone to discuss the fast-changing landscape of bringing seasonal workers to Canada as the border is otherwise closed.
Beth, thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks for talking with me.
So can you tell us just how important temporary workers are for the agriculture sector?
They are incredibly important. Right across the whole spectrum, we have temporary foreign workers that come in and work in agriculture to get the food on the table that we all need.
And what are some of the sectors that particularly use it? I know beekeepers, in my experience, vegetable producers like yourself. What are some of the other areas we might not think of when we think of temporary foreign workers in agriculture?
Greenhouses. There are also some dairies and cattle production people that come in. Pretty much every avenue of agriculture that you can think of. Especially if someone is out in a very rural area, has difficulty getting labor, and many of them have gone through a lot of effort to try and find Canadian workers and been unable to, and have turned to the temporary foreign worker programs as an alternative.
Now, I know that initially, at least, it seemed or was feared that they were going to be caught up in a ban of all non-Canadians coming into the country. But the government now says it looks like that won't be so.
Yeah, they are now currently saying that temporary foreign workers will be allowed in for agriculture and for other areas, but a lot of it is going to be agriculture, primary production, and also processing. And we are just waiting on the details to come down on what will be required to have the people come. Food safety is something that we all take very seriously as Canadian producers. It's one thing that we take into consideration every day with all of the things that we do, and we want to make sure that that our population remains healthy and that we can produce healthy food for them. So that means taking all the precautions that the government tells us they would like us to take.
Now, it seems to me that the approval from the government is one thing, but then there will be a very complex set of logistics to work out. And I'm thinking of, folks maybe, as I say, I know some beekeepers, they bring people in from Nicaragua every year. I'm imagining there aren't a lot of planes in the air between here and Nicaragua right now. So what are some of those sort of very real challenges then that people are grappling with right now?
I think there are going to be a lot of challenges. Some countries, it will be perhaps a little easier, especially with the seasonal ag worker program, where we already have cross-border cooperation and consultation and negotiations with Mexico and with the Caribbean governments. But there is also going to have to be some negotiation perhaps initiated with some countries like Nicaragua and Guatemala, the Philippines, where they have perhaps restricted their airspace, restricted people from traveling, that kind of thing. So it's going to be a lot of work to try and get all that stuff done. And then it will be more work to try and get people flown around, because you're right. I suspect that commercial flights are going to be thin on the ground.
Or in the air, as the case may be.
In the air, as may be. Yeah.
Now, it seems to me then that in a lot of cases, I know not all, but in a lot of cases, there's going to be a very sort of pressing seasonal element at work here with the spring season coming up. Do we have enough time to work this out on that sort of short timeline?
Well, some people actually need employees now. So we're looking at possibly shifting some people who are in country. We are looking to find people to work. But I think we should be able to do our very best to try and get everybody situated so that they have the help that they need when they need it. I believe the beekeepers in particular need people very, very soon. Some of us in the veg industry are looking for people for greenhouses, and they've already brought some in, and we'll be looking for more. For the vegetable growers, depending on what you're doing, some people are looking for transplanters very shortly once the season gets rolling, and others will be harvesting already once the asparagus season starts. So there's a real labor need.
So what can, should, and is possible to do to expedite their arrival then? Do you have a wish list as a sector?
Well, we need our questions answered to start with. When can they come? And I believe that's part of the government's process right now is getting through the legislative or the regulation changes that need to happen so that they can come in once they've been blocked. And then we also need information on what's going to happen. We are assuming, and I can't see any reason why it would be any different, that they would have to isolate for 14 days, the same as anybody coming into the country. So that means we're going to have to do some arranging to take care of people when they get here. And just the logistics of everything and keeping track of who's coming and when they can get here. And if we have to charter flights, all those kinds of things, and then there's the logistics on this end when they arrive in an airport and getting them home so that they can get to where they're going to be living and being isolated. Public safety is uppermost in our mind, so we want to make sure that everything goes smoothly.
Well, thank you so much for taking the time to join us today, Beth, and I wish you luck untangling this.
We are hoping it goes well. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Have a great day.
That was Portage La Prairie, Manitoba farmer Beth Connery telling us about the seasonal farm labor situation during the COVID-19 outbreak. You're listening to Between the Rows, the podcast of Glacier Farm Media. I'm your host this week, Gord Gilmore. A little later in the show, we'll talk to Alexis Kinlan of Alberta Farmer Express on planning for emergencies on the farm. Phil Franz Workington of Markets Farm will fill us in on the action in commodities. But first, we're joined by someone who will be a familiar name to many in the agriculture sector in Western Canada. Barbara Duckworth first joined the staff of The Western Producer in 1988, and readers of that publication have since depended on her work to keep them informed. She's particularly well known for her work covering the beef sector. She's been honored for that several times, most recently by Alberta Farm Animal Care, with that group's Award of Distinction for Communication. She joins us now from her base in Calgary as she prepares to retire from that publication after 32 years. Barbara, thanks for joining us today.
Hi, Gord.
So, what are some of the real highlights of your career as an agriculture journalist?
I think for me, the travel was the highlight because I'm not a reporter who just works the phones. And I believe as agriculture reporters, it behooves us to get out and see and hear and sometimes smell what is going on. And the Western Producer gave me the ability to travel and see how other people farm and process food around the world. So I've seen cherry pie filling being made in the Okanagan, and I've watched a feeder cattle sale in Scotland, and I've watched them making pasta in Arizona with Canadian Durum.
That's fantastic. I would share that. I was able to see the Peace River country, for example. And it's an opportunity you don't otherwise get, right?
Absolutely. Yeah, and it's been my experience that no matter where you go, there may be local issues, but the agriculture community is quite a cohesive group, and they tend to think the same way and have the same goals.
And in your time, what were some of the biggest changes that you've seen?
You know, I thought about this, and I think, you know, technology comes and goes. So it wasn't precision agriculture or self-driving tractors. I think the biggest change that I've seen has been an attitude. So it's no longer what was good enough for grandpa is good enough for me. You know, and farmers have always been environmentalists, and they cared for the land and their livestock in ways that they're sometimes quite poignant. And in the early days of my career, they angrily defended their practices. But over a very short time, they started to agree, yeah, there's room for improvement in terms of how we take care of the environment and how we plant our crops, what we do for our animals. And sadly, though, they're still wondering how to tell their story to the general public that they're doing a good job about feeding the world. But these days, you know, with grocery stores shortages being in so prevalent, it's going to probably raise the profile of a lot of farmers and just how necessary they are to the world.
And now, we were speaking earlier, and you were talking about having been with the Western producer since 1988, and in that time, there have been some big stories. What were the big stories that really jump out over your career for you personally?
The biggest story of my career was BSE. And I started writing about this condition in 1993 on a single cow at Red Deer, Alberta, went down. And at that time, next to nothing was known about it. And then in 2000, I had the opportunity to travel throughout England and Scotland to talk with farmers about how it was affecting their life. And I read most of the Royal Commission report that was issued at the time by the UK government and just talked to as many experts as I could. Then in 2003, it happened here, so I felt quite prepared to cover it because I'd already seen how it devastated a whole industry and an economy. I guess on a side note, though, I never expected the repercussions of this disease to last so long because Canada still has controlled risk status and is therefore limited in some areas of trade. So the big diseases just never go away.
And to me, it sort of speaks to your ability to take the time to learn the topic. And that's something that you only get with the time you put in with your trade. Has that been a good thing for you to be able to take the time to really understand what you're writing about?
Yeah, and by nature, I'm a researcher and I'm a reader. You know, I just read everything. And so when these things would come across my desk, I would take the time to try and read as much as I could and talk to as many people as possible because, you know, everybody's got a little different point of view. But yeah, I learned how to read legal documents and scientific reports because of BSE.
And now I'd like to just sort of get you to dust off your crystal ball, if I could, and talk about some of the big things that the cattle sector is facing right now. And one of them I see is beef sustainability. And I'm wondering where you think that's going to take the industry.
Well, I've always believed the beef industry was sustainable. But what has really changed, I think, is corporations are now telling suppliers, that is the ranchers, how they must be able to prove their sustainability. How they are sustainable. So that's something new for producers. But I've seen that trend happening in the UK where the big grocery chains dictate to farmers how they will grow and produce their crops. So that's something new for Canadian farmers. But I think it's going to be a continuing trend because in the end of the day, it's all food and people are learning as much as they can about how it's produced. Now, some people have grumbled about it. That's just the way the world has changed. And so they're no longer going to be able to just live out there in the back 40 distance from their customers.
Yeah, and interesting you mentioned that the world is changing. One way I've seen it changing is plant protein. Then that's something that has become much more prevalent and kind of high profile. But I'm wondering, what's your gut feeling on it? Is it a flash in the pan? Is it here to stay? What's your feelings about it?
Well, plant protein has always been with us. You know, tofu's been on the menu for decades. I think the current trend is just good marketing, and perhaps they're offering a better product and a better choice to some people who want to try something different. But, you know, for the people who think they're saving the planet, they're entitled to their opinion. And I think there's going to be a small proportion of the population that will buy it, and it'll become mainstream for them. But most people are still omnivorous, and to me, it was interesting in the last couple of weeks when we've been going for groceries, what has sold out on the store shelves? Milk, eggs, and meat. The plant-based products are still sitting there on the shelf. So I think it offers a choice when you can afford it. And over time, the quality is going to continue to improve, and I think they'll get away from some of the problems they have with overprocessing and the additives that people are a little bit scared of.
So it sounds like you feel like it's sort of another competing product, but not necessarily going to be sort of the thing that takes over.
Not in my lifetime. You know, in Star Trek, they have food replicators, and it's made out of who knows what. But I don't think we're at that point just now. I think we're still going to be omnivorous for a few decades yet.
And just one last question to close off. You alluded to it when you were talking about grocery shopping and the some of the shelves being empty. What's your take on this COVID-19 situation and its impact on the agriculture sector?
Well, you know, my concern about COVID-19 is that in times of any crisis, somebody always makes money and others are bankrupted. So the news stories and social media are showing us how poorly informed the general public is about science, as well as showing us the inability people seem to have in looking after themselves. So people are posting pictures online of something they cooked for the first time, and I just think, how did we become so helpless? But I've also seen other examples of just incredible kindness, because unexpected heroes always emerge during a crisis. But another concern I have is that there doesn't appear to be an exit strategy. And I've written hundreds of stories about disease, and people need to understand these things do not go away. The disease-causing organisms are always circulating. So there'll be another one hitting the population in some unexpected fashion. And I just worry that the governments and the general public will have learned nothing from this current crisis.
Well, Barbara, I thank you for taking the time to talk with us. And I thank you for your many, many years of service on behalf of farmers in Western Canada. And all the best in retirement.
Welcome. Thank you.
That was the legendary Barbara Duckworth, sharing some of the highlights of her long and respected career at the Western Producer. This is Between the Rows, and I'm this week's host, Gord Gilmore. A bit later, Phil Franz Workington of Markets Farm will update us on the markets during this time of uncertainty. But first, Alexis Kinlan of Alberta Farmer Express fills us in on a recent seminar about planning for emergencies down on the farm.
Alexis, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me today.
So ironically, or perhaps fittingly, you recently filed a story on emergency preparedness from an event that became an online seminar in the wake of COVID-19. What did the experts have to say about how the current situation illustrates the need for this sort of planning?
Well, so this session was done by Rebecca Hustad, who many people in Alberta and probably across Canada might have met before. She's done a lot of technical large animal rescue and emergency planning seminars in Alberta, at least for sure, that I know of, and I'm assuming in other provinces. But what she said is that this COVID-19 is a very different situation. She says there's generally in emergency management, we're looking at two situations with animals. It's evacuation, which is getting the animals out of there, or sheltering in. And this COVID-19 is definitely a sheltering in kind of situation where everyone is bunking down, there's limited movement, and everyone's supposed to stay in their place. But what is still different is that in the case of animals, some of them still have to move. We have to move. Animals have to go to the processing plants. They have to go to other locations. So that's a little bit something different to consider in this kind of emergency, which she said is unprecedented as far as she could see from looking up past emergency plans.
So what was her advice then for livestock producers who are kind of grappling with that? How do you ship product while you're still looking to keep the farm biosecure?
Well, so what you do is you just, well, I guess very carefully, just to really keep, I mean, one thing that Rebecca said over and over again is that each farm is different. And every producer knows their operation. So she didn't make a lot of general statements because she just wanted everyone to think about their own particular situation and operation. But one of the things that she said that works really well is communication. So, you know, if people are going to be coming onto your farm to deliver stuff, are you going to communicate with them ahead of time by text or by a phone call so you don't have to go out and greet them? You know, are you able to move animals on your farm or do your farm operations while maintaining proper hygiene and biosecurity and social distancing? So it's just taking all those, the health requirements of COVID-19 into effect while we're doing things on the farm.
And now, obviously, emergency planning for farmers, it goes beyond just this specific case. So what did they have to say about emergency planning for farmers? What's at the heart of it, and where should they be starting?
Well, again, it comes back to looking at your own operation. And also just getting, you know, familiar with your own operation and all the information that you need to run it. One of the things you need to think about in COVID-19 in particular, some of the supply chains are going to be affected. So Are you going to have access to some of your pharmaceutical products? Maybe you should be thinking ahead to write things you might need that might run out. Not in a panic or hoarding situation, just looking ahead, just thinking about your staffing requirements, what you would do if someone got sick or needed to take time off, just thinking about contingency plans for your business. Like, how are you going to bring your business back online after COVID-19 is over? So basically, yeah, you might have to learn a little bit more about social media and technology, or have a text messaging list, like a list of contacts that people might need to phone or get a hold of, in case you weren't available to do it. So it's also just kind of simplifying your business so that if for whatever reason you got sick, or if someone else on your farm got sick, that someone be able to still operate the farm without necessarily having you there.
And it sounds like then that sort of it's the old adage of hope for the best and plan for the worst, and not just sort of deal with this on an ad hoc basis, but to have a plan in place before something like this happens.
Well, exactly. And I'm hoping that people will continue to do things like have safety meetings, have some discussions. And I mean, this can also be like for some people an opportunity just to identify maybe what they could do to plan better now that, you know, we're thinking of what the potential scenarios are. I'm not saying panic, because I don't think that panicking is useful, and I don't think Rebecca Husted would want other people to panic later. But this is an opportunity to look at your business and find out how you can be safe and what you can be doing better.
And then what about in terms of the future then? Was there any advice for what to do when we do find ourselves finally through the end of this situation?
Well, one thing that she did suggest that I think is was useful, is she said that there are often funds during major disasters. Sometimes there's local programs or grants, and a lot of farmers are unaware they exist. So that might be something to look in for. I would probably say that it would be really good. I've talked to a lot of people from, you know, commodity groups, and I know that people working at these commodity groups, the commissions and stuff, are working hard. So I would just pay attention, especially if you haven't engaged with your commission or commodity group before. You might want to, because they might just be able to tell you some of the information that's happening, keep you aware of some of the management stuff that could help you out. And I think that's good. That's good advice for right now, but it'll be good advice for whenever we kind of get into a different situation.
Well, that's great, Alexis. Thank you so much for filling us in on this. And please do stay healthy for us.
Oh, thank you so much. You too.
That was Alberta Farmer Express's Alexis Kinlan. You're listening to Between the Rows, and I'm this week's host, Gord Gilmore. And now, last but far from least, we're joined by Phil Franz Workington of Markets Farm to make sense of the markets for us.
Phil, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
So, I'll start with the obvious question. What's been the impact of COVID-19 on the markets so far?
Yeah, it's definitely all anybody is talking about, and the impact is, as every email I've been getting from anyone I've ever done business with, is it's a fluid situation. So the impact has been everything kind of tanked on sort of initial as social distancing and quarantines came to North America. But the past week, most of the grains and oilseeds have been moving higher. And a lot of that is linked to the idea that, kind of panic buying, people are, especially things like wheat, has been really supportive for that. And just sort of a general uncertainty, people have been, buyers have been kind of picking up what is seen as a bargain, I guess.
And my impression is that, like, certainly in terms of things like the stock market and so on, agriculture commodities have been more durable. But they've been more durable than some of the other commodities I wouldn't have maybe expected, like gold. It seems to me like they're outperforming gold right now. What's making them more durable? Is this sort of a rush to safety? Is agriculture kind of seen as a safe port in a storm?
Yeah, the gold one is a bit of a mystery to me as well, because that's usually the safe haven, right? But yeah, I think you're onto something there with the people are looking for some security, and food is definitely one of the things. You can't do much with gold, but you'll need grains and whatnot to live. So there's some support there, yeah.
And what about in terms of sort of dangers that are still lurking out there for the commodity markets? What is it that you're watching as you're pondering the markets these days?
Well, I guess there's a lot going on, a lot of moving pieces. Most directly might be right now it's fairly, I wouldn't say business as usual, but commercial traffic is still moving, so that hasn't really slow down too much. But the question is, what if borders get shut to commercial trade, or what if the logistics all the port workers somewhere need to be quarantined, and what happens then? So those are some of the kind of questions out there. And then also I guess keep an eye on energy markets and the currency markets. The crude oil is down a lot, so that makes transportation cheaper, but unintended consequences of cheaper oil also come into play. And the weak Canadian dollar is good for Canadian markets, but strong U.S. dollar cuts into their movements, and it all sort of works together for an unforeseen outcome right now.
I think that's the thing that has really impressed me, is been impressed upon me, I should say, is just how many moving parts they are and how interconnected they are. How does a complex system like a market respond to this kind of a black swan event? I mean, it's just spinning out stuff that I never would have predicted.
Yeah, well, that's the question that we're going to find the answer to, I guess, in the next while as... this becomes our new normal. As it's still fairly new. I'm personally 3 days into working from home, and it's going to be lots of adjustments, and bigger picture adjustments for like how these grain markets work under this unknown reality. Donald Rumsfeld, the known knowns and the known unknowns and the unknown knowns, or whatever all that was. Like, we don't know what we don't know, so it could change tomorrow with some fresh news, right? So,
and what are the things
hold on.
What are the things you're watching as you're holding on then, in terms of making sure things continue to function?
Yeah, well, just watching, keeping an eye on the grain movement numbers. We haven't really seen, they're always a couple weeks delayed, so we'll see if there's any shifts in those numbers. Spring is coming, so on top of it all, seeding and harvesting last year's leftover crops is going to come into play soon too. So they'll, lots to keep an eye on, but the underlying general supply-demand fundamentals are kind of on the back burner for now, as the markets take wild swings based off as they try to figure out the bigger world dynamics, and different countries put in stimulus measures to support their economies. And yeah, I didn't mention that yet too, but what will, if we're injecting trillions of dollars into economies to prop things up, what does that mean? So another question to watch for the outcome.
Yeah, lots to watch, that's for sure. Well, thanks, Phil. We'll definitely touch base with you as we're going through this as the weeks go on.
Well, thanks for having me.
That was Phil Franz Workington of Markets Farm. You've been listening to Between the Rows, the podcast of Glacier Farm Media.
I'm your host this week, Gord Gilmore, wishing you all the best. Stay safe, stay healthy, and we'll hope you join us again next time.
Between the Rows is a production of Glacier Farm Media, Canada's leading farm publisher. We'd love to hear what you think of the show and invite you to send your comments to btr@farmmedia.com or visit us at membersgetmore.ca and sign up today.